Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Who was Fanny Alger, and why did Emma Smith kick her out of her house? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. Today I have Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM, with me, and we're going to discuss this question as we continue our look at the book titled Mormon Enigma, Emma Hale Smith by Linda King Newell and Valeen Tippetts Avery. We're still in the Kirtland area. And polygamy is becoming an issue. And really, a lot of people will say, a lot of Mormon historians, of course, you know, there's a lot of differences of opinion on this. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at the early years of plural marriage and Joseph Smith's participation in that practice, there's a lot of conflicting accounts. So you have to take some things with a little bit of a grain of salt, but there's one thing for sure. The story of Fanny Alger seems to be a story that a lot of historians at least acknowledge happened to a certain extent. Whether or not she was really Joseph Smith's first plural wife, there's a little bit of a controversy there. But if she wasn't, then what was Joseph Smith doing with this young girl? But anyway, our two authors on page 66 introduce Fanny Alger.
It says, first paragraph, Emma took 19-year-old Fanny Alger into her home early in 1835. Now, we had looked this up. She was born in September, so she really would have only been 18 at this time, if that's true, early in 1835. Fanny's parents and brother were members of the church. Benjamin F. Johnson said she was, quote, a very nice and comely young woman about my own age, towards whom not only myself, but everyone seemed partial for the amiability of her character, and it was whispered even then that Joseph loved her. But Joseph loved her indiscreetly, for Warren Parrish told Benjamin Johnson, quote, that he himself and Oliver Cowdery did know that Joseph had Fanny Alger as a wife, for they were spied upon and found together, end quote.
Now, this spied upon and found together is a story that we find a number of sources for, one of which is from Benjamin Johnson. In fact, if you were to look in the book In Sacred Loneliness by Mormon writer Todd Compton, he talks about this on pages 34 and 35 of his book. And he specifically mentions Benjamin Johnson. He said, Benjamin Johnson, a third major witness to the Fanny Alger marriage, reports that she was, as you just said, a very nice and comely young woman. But I don't need to repeat that. He goes on, though, and says, and then, after the rumors, in brackets, there was some trouble with Oliver Cowdery. And whisper said it was relating to a girl then living in his, the Smith's family, and I was afterwards told by Warren Parrish that he himself and Oliver Cowdery did know that Joseph had Fanny Alger as a wife, for they were spied upon and found together, and I can now see that as at Nauvoo. Now, what does that mean? He's comparing what took place in Kirtland with the same type of pattern that would take place later on when the saints would move from Missouri to Illinois, in particular, Nauvoo, Illinois, on the banks of the Mississippi. Johnson goes on to say, so at Kirtland, that the suspicion or knowledge of the prophet's plural relation was one of the causes of apostasy and disruption at Kirtland, although at the time there was little said publicly upon the subject. What is this talking about? Well, according to Todd Compton, and also in this book, Mormon Enigma, William McClellan had told the story. Now, William McClellan was an apostle in the Mormon Church. He was excommunicated in 1838, and it was about the time of the Kirtland Bank scandal, and some believe that that was one of the reasons why McClellan had lost faith in Joseph Smith. According to page 35 in Sacred Loneliness, in an 1872 letter to Joseph Smith III, William McClellan wrote, quoting, again I told her, Emma, I heard that one night she missed Joseph and Fanny Alger. She went to the barn and saw him and Fanny in the barn together alone. She looked through a crack and saw the transaction. She told me this story, too, was verily true. Apparently, Joseph Smith has this reputation with this young girl, and something, obviously, it seems, is going on that's sexual. That's, at least that's what everyone
That's what a transaction is
well,
referring
to. Well, that's what I'm assuming. That was probably the 19th century nice way of putting it. But the authors talk about McClellan, and they cite that story on page 66. Again, we're going back to Mormon Enigma.
It says this, "Perhaps in his old age, William McClellan confused the hired girl Fanny Alger with the Fanny Hill of John Cleland's 1749 novel and came up with the hired girl, Miss Hill."
Now, the book that the authors are referring to by John Cleland, that was 1749, this novel about Miss Hill.
Life Adventures of Miss Hill.
Fanny Hill. I when you look at the endnote that they have for that, they really don't discuss why they would make that kind of an accusation against William McClellan. That's a pretty serious charge when you figure out that this book about Fanny Hill was what? It was 18th century pornography.
It was what they called prose pornography, and the first pornography to use the form of the novel. Ended up becoming one of the most persecuted and banned books in all of history and has become a symbol of obscenity, because what this story is about is this woman named Fanny Hill relating her story of all of her sexual escapades as she becomes experienced. First, she was naive and a virgin. She was almost raped. And it goes on, and it tells all of the different encounters involving everything from just regular sex, prostitution, bisexuality, homosexuality that she would observe from others, talking a lot about the parts of men, those kinds of things. This is a pretty gross book.
Now, this is what kind of throws me off here. Why would the two authors here, why would Linda King Newell and Valene Tippetts Avery include that, which really sounds like an innuendo at the very end of this paragraph, to somehow besmirch William McClellan's character?
The book was banned in the United States.
1820s.
1821, and had been banned in England. It didn't come back into America until the 20th century. This is 15 years later or so. I mean, is this book so popular that everybody thinks of Fanny Hill? And so Fanny Alger, he mixed them up. I don't quite get it.
I don't either. It's confusing to me why they would even make that statement, especially since the endnote doesn't explain why they make that accusation.
Which it really needs to, and we've written several books, and we always are trying to assume what the reader is thinking or asking. We want to make sure we answer those questions. You're going to bring in one sentence and throw that out, then explain why you're thinking that he was mixing up Fanny Hill with Fanny Alger.
We go back to Todd Compton's book on page 34 in Sacred Loneliness, where he writes, "Another view of the Smith-Alger marriage is given by Annalisa Webb Young, the woman who divorced Brigham Young, then wrote an expose of polygamy. Though she was antagonistic when she wrote this account, and it was written comparatively late, her parents were eyewitnesses to the later part of the Alger Smith story, and it seems to be written without excessive rancor." Quoting, "Mrs. Smith had an adopted daughter, a very pretty, pleasing young girl about 17 years old. She was extremely fond of her. No own mother could be more devoted, and their affection for each other was a constant object of remark. So absorbing and genuine did it seem." End quote. Compton goes on to say, "Fanny was probably living with the Smiths as a hired girl or live-in maid, a common occurrence in America at the time. She would have turned 18 in September 1834, and Joseph would have been 28. And Eliza continues, he says, quoting, "Consequently, it was with a shocked surprise that the people heard that Sister Emma had turned Fanny out of the house in the night. It was felt that she, Emma, certainly must have had some very good reason for her action. By degrees, it became whispered about that Joseph's love for his adopted daughter was by no means a paternal affection, and his wife, discovering the fact, at once took measures to place the girl beyond his reach. Compton goes on to say this same pattern was repeated when the Partridge sisters hired girls in Joseph's home in Nauvoo, secretly married him, and then were expelled by Emma. The latter also reportedly drove Eliza Snow suddenly from her house. So remember, Emma and Joseph had people stay as boarders in their home, no doubt to bring in some extra income. It seems awfully odd that the women who stayed at the home are somehow being connected to Joseph Smith in some sexual type manner. So folks, the lesson is don't let your women stay at the Joseph Smith house. I mean, come on. This is not a good thing. This pattern still keeps following him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we could say, well, this is just the vicious rumor of just one or two people, but the stories seem to be gelling. They might not have all of the same details, but I have to ask you, is this really the behavior of what we would expect from a true prophet of God? I mean, I'm not expecting perfection from an individual. None of us are perfect. But do you ever really hear about Joseph Smith repenting for this kind of behavior? No, he justifies it by claiming God told him it was okay.
Well, and I think we can agree with Oliver Cowdery, who said a dirty, nasty, filthy affair of his and Fanny Alger's was talked over. I mean, it's a horrible thing that we're talking about, but this is history. This is what the historians are saying. This is what these two ladies writing Mormon Enigma are saying is true. And if it's true, we have huge problems with this.
And certainly it did drive a wedge, as the authors would say. It drove a wedge between Oliver Cowdery and Joseph Smith. And as you can understand, a person who has some ethical morals would find Joseph Smith's behavior to be quite troubling. The amazing thing is that even many modern Mormons tend to turn a blind eye when they hear this story.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Let me ask you this. Have you ever wondered how to answer questions you were asked by your LDS friend? Well, a new resource by Kriegel Publishers and written by MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson is exactly what you need. Answering Mormons Questions is a 300-page book covering 36 common questions that Mormons often pose. Now you'll have the ability to respond to them with sound biblical reasoning. The book includes a glossary of common LDS terms and has study questions at the end of each chapter. Questions such as, wouldn't you like to have your marriage and family endure for all eternity? And what's wrong with praying about the Book of Mormon are dealt with in a straightforward but loving manner. Available at the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore, 1358 West Temple in Salt Lake City. Or if you prefer, you can order online at mrm.org. That's mrm.org. Answering Mormons Questions. It's a resource every Christian needs.